One port to rule them all, one port to charge them. In the land of Europe, where the Brexit is happening. Hey, something had to break down there. This is the Android Police Podcast.
It's Friday, January 31st. Welcome. Along with Cody Toombs, I'm Corbin Davenport. And we're ending the week with a little bit of a short episode. There's not a whole lot happening right now.
What you say now. Well, watch this be a long one.
Yeah, this will be like another like hour-long podcast, I know. But yeah, so the first thing we're going to talk about is some stuff to come out of the European Union. And no, we're not talking about Brexit. This is about a new mandatory common charger rule that was passed in the European Parliament recently. Cody, do you want to take over? Because I think you have stronger feelings about this than I.
Okay, well, my strong feelings were going to come a bit later, but yeah, I can easily introduce this. So the European Parliament has basically decided it's time to get rid of multiple charger types and center around one thing specifically. Now, they haven't actually said what that one thing is going to be, but they voted and agreed they need to do that. And to be technically accurate, they're not saying it has to be one specific charger. They're saying more that there have to be universal chargers that are common, which, let's be honest, that means one thing. But basically, everyone is expecting this to become USB Type-C. So that's what every company is using, except for Apple, and in theory, maybe a couple of other companies on the side. So the goal will be, let's get everybody using USB-C from this point forward. And it'll take a little while for this to actually go into effect. I believe, technically, now that the Parliament has voted to do this, they will also have to actually pass it as a law, which probably won't come until later this year. If this happens, this will be a non-voluntary agreement. It will not allow companies to just randomly keep doing whatever they want. And there will actually be penalties, including things like not even being able to sell your device in the EU if you won't ship with a port that is approved. It's a step forward. It basically would bring an end to micro USB as a charging port for most small accessories. It would theoretically push Apple to drop the Lightning connector. In theory, it would get everything onto USB-C for the foreseeable future.
Everyone's been focused about the Apple aspect, but I hadn't even thought of micro USB going away forever. This sounds great. I'm way more excited about that part.
Yeah. And honestly, like if you set Apple outside of this discussion, I think almost everybody kind of really agrees. Let's get everything moving to USB-C permanently from this point forward, because every once in a while we still have devices coming out, especially like earbuds, random other little accessories.
Cameras.
These are constantly still coming out with micro USB. Yes, cameras would be a great one. I'd love to see all cameras moving to USB-C.
I'm pretty sure all of Amazon's Kindles still use micro USB. That really annoys me.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't even realize
and
that.
And all of their tablets except like the highest end one. It's really annoying.
Yeah. So it's a good move. Overall, it's definitely a good move. So I personally have two reservations about this. One of them is basically they're saying that they want to move to USB-C. What they're not saying and what does not seem to be mentioned anywhere in this is that USB-C is a mess. It is an unmitigated disaster when it comes to actual standardization. You can basically pick up USB-C in type 2, type 3, version 2, version 3, 3.1, 3.1 Gen 2, and there are a couple of other various weird implementations. And at this point, most of these are not properly labeled on a cable. They're not clear when you buy them. And there's almost no way to actually test them without specialized software or specialized hardware. So I honestly kind of hate that. USB-C has become its own mess. And I think if they're going to pass a law like this, they really need to nail down things like this. They need to basically set some kind of a standard that at least anything shipping after certain points needs to support basically a latest version kind of situation.
Yeah, and it doesn't help that the USB forum keeps changing the version numbers and the gens. Like, I think how it works now is that, like, I think we're up to USB 3.2. I know 4 is coming, but we're at 3.2 right now. And I think 3.2 Gen 1 is 3.0. And, like, I think now they're appending, like, the speed to the end of the generations to make it more clear, but it's still really confusing. It's like if you bought, like, a car from last year and they called it a 2020 Gen 1. That's essentially what USB is doing. And it makes everything so much more complicated than it needs to be. Just have version numbers. It's not that confusing.
Well, and again, I'm bothered by the fact that you cannot look at the cable and actually tell what it is. Something a lot of people may not really realize is with USB-A, that little slab of plastic that's inside the plug. Yeah,
they did actually, the colors.
Yeah, it's colored based on the version number it supports. If you're looking at USB 1.0, it was in black. If you're looking at 2.0, it was in white. And if you're looking at 3.0, it's in this crazy bright blue. Honestly, I don't think most people even realized this was a thing until the blue happened because it was so weird.
I didn't know about the white at all.
Yeah.
I just thought that was like Apple, because that you know, I had Macs and iPods around that time. So I just thought that was Apple making all their cables match their products.
No, that makes sense. And I fully admit, even I had to check what this was because, well, I'm holding a cable right now and I had to look like, wait, is it going to be white or black? I don't remember. Mm-hmm. These things don't really matter that much. But this is the kind of thing that makes a big deal. And actually, in chat, I'm being told black is 2. So maybe I have them reversed, which would be weird because I just received a brand new cable that has white. But point is, there is color coding. And so you can at least identify this stuff from a real visible thing. USB-C does not have this. It is not specified. It's not part of the rules. There's not even really a way to do this. And so, yeah, kind of a problem.
But maybe that will be worked out in time.
Yeah. So my other issue with this, and if you tuned into the live stream a little bit before the show, you probably heard my rant on this, which included many more expletives. But the short issue here is the European Parliament has cited as one of their motivations for this to reduce e-waste. And that's a great motive. It's certainly a good goal. They don't want you to buy many different cables and end up throwing them all away because maybe a single device that used a single plug becomes, you know, you might stop using it or it might break or something like that, and you never buy another device like that again. As a result, you're also throwing away the cable that came with it. Well, ideally, if everything's centered around one charging port, you'll get to reuse the cable and throw away far fewer accessories. Well, Apple has come along and argued that the Lightning connector is less wasteful than USB-C. And their basic logic here is that the connector is smaller, it has less of a carbon footprint, less physical waste when you throw this away. Now, I could nitpick how the cable and the plug do not account for the 20% Apple cites, but that's a minor issue. I think the bigger issue here is that when you compare different types of plugs over the years, most of the USB plugs have been designed with some kind of a spring inside the plug. And the reason for this is when you plug it in, you want some sort of tension. You want that friction that holds the plug in place. Otherwise, it would just fall out loosely. Well, over time, those plugs will basically wear out. The spring starts losing its elasticity and won't hold as well. With Lightning, the design of that plug guarantees that the spring is inside the device. It's inside the actual port rather than built into the plug. So when that spring goes, it's the device that will no longer hold a cable. You can't buy a new cable. You can't just plug a new thing in. It's the whole device that is now going to be loose and not hold. Logically, to me, that means that as soon as that spring wears out and as soon as the port goes bad, you have to basically throw away the whole device. That's more carbon footprint, more e-waste than throwing away a cable I'm much more content throwing away a small cable than a whole phone just because a port goes bad.
Yeah, and you can imagine how much more difficult recycling a phone would be than a cable. You know, like if you tried to recycle both those things.
Yeah. So I think Apple, understandably, they pushed for Lightning because there was no USB-C back then. They had a good incentive and a good intent with this, but they had a bad design, and now they're trying to defend it. And I think that is just the worst possible strategy in this case. Apple really should just give up on this one, take the loss, and move everything to USB-C. They've already moved a couple iPads there. They've moved all their laptops there. Just take the hit and move phones.
It is really funny that, like, now their phones are incompatible with their laptops.
Yeah.
And, like, now they have iOS devices on with both ports. You know, they have their iPad Pros on the Type-C and everything else on Lightning. It's just, it's really funny. It's like Apple is still in that stage that most of the tech industry was 3 years ago when, like, we were in this weird transition stage when some devices had that and some didn't. And they've just stuck there.
Yeah.
They've stuck themselves there.
So, yeah, there's going to be some, I'm sure, some of the silliest controversies. And unfortunately, I think, like I said earlier, I don't think they're taking very seriously the issue that USB-C standards are really anything but standards at this point. But overall, this will at least be a good move in something that's kind of a right direction. So do you want to take the next one?
Sure.
Yeah, why not? We'll just throw Jules's script out the window.
Yeah, that's fine. It's just, it's like Pirates of the Caribbean where they're just guidelines, they're not rules. But yeah, so in this latest episode of the Huawei drama llama that keeps going on and on, a Huawei representative in an interview was saying that Huawei wanted to get rid of all its dependence on U.S. companies, which is understandable. And in the interview, they actually said Huawei would not return to Google services, theoretically, even if Google allowed them or if that political pressure they're under from the U.S. government went away overnight. And he also talked about how the Huawei mobile services, which is sort of their version of Google Play services, they already replaced 24 out of 60 APIs that they deem essential. So I assume that's stuff like locations and all that stuff that the Play services are usually responsible for. And they actually have $3 billion and 4,000 developers on staff for implementing that, which, again, like, it's just this whole Huawei situation really rings how difficult now it is to pry Google away from Android, where Google Play Services has become more and more a critical part of the OS. And when you take that out, you're left with a brick, essentially. He also talked about how they're inviting U.S. applications to publish on their app store. But anyway, so that was the whole thing, and that made the rounds. And then Huawei later stated, they sort of kind of backpedaled, but not really. They mentioned that they'd still prefer to use, quote, an open Android, quote, which is actually what they wouldn't be using with Google services. But let's ignore that point. But that would be their first choice to use Google stuff. But they're continuing down this road, which, again, makes sense because they could very easily lose all their access to U.S. companies again, and it doesn't really make sense to try to rely on that. Yeah, so it is very interesting to see Huawei take the fundamentals of Android, but try to replace every Google aspect of it. And I like using Linux on my desktops. I have an interest in open source software. And this is kind of something that the open software community has been trying to do for a long time, is make Android, completely open source Android, a viable platform. Like, I remember there was a project a long time ago called Replicant. Do you remember that?
I know I've heard the name.
Okay. It was like open source Android, but no Google services. And they also tried to reverse engineer all the proprietary device blobs, so it only worked on like 6 phones. But it was an interesting project. So it's interesting to see, like, can this problem be solved if you're one of the largest companies on earth? And it turns out, it seems so. They're doing an okay job. You know, they're still selling phones like hotcakes in China because Google services were never a problem there. And, you know, who knows, maybe in a maybe even a few months. I mean, they might have something comparable to all of Google services, because they're slowly closing all the feature gaps. Like we talked about on an earlier podcast, how they're now working with TomTom to create like a Google Maps equivalent. So they're slowly checking every box, and I think they'll eventually get there.
Yeah, I think this is an obvious move. I don't think Huawei, obviously they have a choice, but I don't think it was a very good choice. With U.S. politics the way that they are, it would be risky to keep relying on Google, even if, you know, they obviously haven't been relying on Google for the last several months, but to go back to a reliance on Google would be possibly very dangerous and error prone. So
yeah,
I get it. I don't think that there really was much of a good choice here. And honestly, I think the loser in this situation is Google, because mm-hmm. now it's one less partner that's paying licensing fees. It's one less partner that is a data source. It's one less partner that they could have used as an entry point into China. These are all really big losing points for Google at this stage. And it's unfortunate, but I don't know that there's much that could really be done about it. I do think it's interesting that they're making such an open invitation to all the various services like Facebook and others, because this is sort of opening the floodgates. And you know that there are a lot of developers who are going to be looking at alternatives because they don't like the Play Store pay structure. They don't like various things about how Google has handled itself. So this could be a pretty big hit overall. The other thing I thought was interesting is this news that Huawei intends to open a proxy corporation in Europe. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm not sure. But as far as I'm aware, the entity list doesn't just preclude direct trading with a company. I believe it precludes all trading with company, even via proxy. I'm not totally sure, but I thought that was kind of a no-no. It'd be sort of like how, not Huawei, but the other company, I'll think of it later, how they got in trouble for trading with Iran, even though they weren't really doing it directly.
Yeah, they were doing, the issue was the U.S. had a trade ban with Iran. They had some sub-company that was trading with Iran or selling products, something like that.
But yeah, anyway, so I'm not sure that the proxy company is a viable option here to totally avoid trouble. But
no, I think the U.S. government would see that as just Huawei trying to get around
it. And this could actually make it worse because it is such an obvious attempt to get around it.
Yeah, especially since Huawei has sort of like continued to say it's innocent and that it, you know, hasn't really done anything wrong. There's just all these allegations of security against it. And that would probably ruin that argument if they were trying really hard to get around these rules. So speaking of spending money, I guess. I don't know. So Android Police is live on Twitch 4 times a week, and we can't do all those shows without your support. The best way to help the shows is by subscribing to us on Twitch. When you subscribe, you get a fun emoji of Ryan, one of our editors, when he was really drunk. It's a lot of fun to use. You also get extra entry methods in all of our giveaways that we do, so that's always fun. Tiers start at $5 a month. But if you have Amazon Prime, you can actually subscribe to us for free, and it still helps us. You know, it's not just funny money. It actually does help us. However, if you do that, you have to manually resubscribe every month. You just click the button again on our homepage, and you can learn more about that at twitch.tv/AndroidPolice. If you don't use Twitch, what's wrong with you? I'd say first, but that's okay. We'll still take your money. You can go to androidpolice.com and hit the donate button, and we have a lot of other ways you can help support us. And thanks to all of our subscribers for helping us out. We've been a Twitch affiliate for, I think, over a year now, something like that.
Oh, well over, yeah.
Yeah. So again, thank you so much to everyone who has subscribed. That was my dog.
So, speaking of things that shouldn't cost too much, right?
That's good. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. So, I reviewed the new Moto 360, and I actually have it right here. If you're watching the show, you can see it. It looks a lot like the first gen Huawei watch. So it's like stainless steel. They come in a couple different colors and styles, but the version I got is the leather band with the stainless steel body. And this actually isn't made by Motorola. It's made by a company called eBuyNow, and they've purchased the or are licensing the Moto 360 name. So it's not really related to Motorola in any way except the name. And they really let you know that they licensed the name, because the Moto 360 name and logo is on like five different places on this watch. So it's like, it's even like on the underside of the band and Moto logo on the bottom of the watch. There's a Moto logo on the little spinner dial. Oh, and they even, this is what I love, they even have Moto 360 on the little like wrist loop thing. They have it like embossed. So you really won't forget what watch you're wearing, just in case you, you know, tend to do that.
When they've licensed out the name and, or I mean, it's licensing to themselves, I guess, but whatever. You know, when the name is going out there and that's really the only thing that's still keeping this the same watch or same family of watches, you got to make sure that name is everywhere.
Yeah, they're really letting you know this is a Moto 360. So besides the design, this is pretty much just a Wear OS watch. There's no standout features. It has almost anything you'd expect. It has the Snapdragon Wear 3100 chip. It has water resistance. It has NFC for Google Pay, heart rate monitor, all that fun stuff. It doesn't have a speaker, which is a little bit weird for a Wear OS watch at this point, but not completely unusual. So you won't be able to take calls on this, or like Google Assistant won't be able to do voice replies back to you, which I kind of like. But there's just like, again, there's nothing really super special about this watch. The design isn't super unique. Again, it kind of just looks like most of Fossil's watches. And there's no special apps pre-installed, you know, like Fossil and MobVoit, which makes the tech watches. They usually have at least one or two apps that add maybe special health features to it or something. There's nothing here. It's just bare bones Wear OS. Like, they didn't even include any of the watch faces from the previous Moto watches, which I feel like would have been like really easy to do. But nope, none of the cool designs that were on the previous watches. I think there's only like 11 watch faces. Whereas, like, if you buy the Fossil Gen 5, Fossil just keeps adding watch faces. So there's like 50 at this point. But of course, you can still download some from the Play Store if you don't like any of the included ones. But the main kicker for this is the price. Because right now they're selling it for $350. It's a lot for any smartwatch. It's especially a lot for a Wear OS device. Especially when you compare that the Fossil Gen 5, which is sort of, I guess, the flagship Wear OS device at the moment, I believe right now that's around $300. And it's even gone as low, I'm sorry, it's $250 right now on Amazon. And it's gone as low as $170. And compared to this, the Fossil Gen 5 is mostly the same, but it does have a few special software features. And it does have a third button that you can map to open apps or something like that. So it really doesn't make any sense at all to buy this watch. And I do wonder why they priced it so high. I don't know if there's a huge amount of people that were waiting for something called the Moto 360. Like, they weren't. I assume the people waiting for a new Moto 360 were probably hoping Motorola would do it and it would have a similar design to the original watches. But this is pretty much just a Moto 360 in name that costs too much money. I also wonder if this is maybe one of those situations, kind of like most expensive flagship phones, where they're super overpriced to begin with so that they can do big discounts on them later and it looks nicer on paper, like, wow, I'm saving $100. It remains to be seen if that's the case here. But again, no one should buy this for $350.
Yeah. And seeing as how it's coming out as late as it is, or as early as it is, depending on how you look at it, they're missing all of the like shopping sale season. So, I mean, yeah, it could definitely go on sale in the near future, but you're not going to have like the excuse of Black Friday. You're not going to have any big, obvious high momentum opportunities to push these out at some sort of lower, more reasonable price. So yeah, bad time.
And like, it's even weird. You can only buy this from the Moto360.com website or B&H Photo. Those are the only two websites I found that are selling this, which is very strange, but yeah, whatever.
At least for right now, you never know. This might, yeah, it might get more accessibility in the future, but
yeah. So basically just there's not really a reason to buy this. Even if it goes, even if this becomes like 50, like 20 bucks cheaper than the Fossil Gen 5, I'd still buy the Gen 5 over this because it does have a few added software and hardware features. Like the Gen 5 does have a speaker, for instance. This is just a very strange product. I don't know why it's priced like this, but yeah. So that's the Moto 360. And you can find our full review on androidpolice.com. And we have lots of pretty pictures and other supplementary information.
So speaking of supplementary, I don't know. I'm just grabbing whatever transition there is.
They can't all be winners. It's okay.
Yeah. So you may have heard, because, you know, it is clearly the single most important thing that has happened this week, possibly this year. Emoji 13.0 has been announced. Yes. The Unicode Consortium has announced 65 new distinct emoji. It's happening, folks.
They heard you. They heard where you were like, I don't think there are enough emoji that I have to scroll to get to the one I want. So they're adding even more for you.
Yeah. See, this is the reason why apps like Gboard and a few other keyboards, like, they just take words you type and now suggest emoji to go with them.
Yeah, because the list is completely useless at this point.
Oh, yeah. It's funny. So I was actually scrolling through the list. Sorry, we're already derailing. But I was scrolling through the list and looking at some of the new stuff, and it was just baffling to me because it looks exactly like the images that would go into like a cheap mobile game sprites, like the potted plant, blueberries, all these things. They look like materials that you would craft with, or maybe the hut emoji. It looks like the type of thing that would be in a mobile game where you're on an island and this is the building that you would put up. All of these things, it's starting to look like a game, which is kind of awesome and kind of terrible all at once. Also, I hope somebody makes an emoji game that is just 100% just straight up taking all of these emoji and turning them into something.
Yeah, like the entire interface is built with emoji too. It's like an ASCII game.
Exactly. So, notably, and I will say that you can tell that the emoji group really just wants to screw with us. They really want the controversy, because this year, like almost every year for the past, five, they are including some highly controversial changes, including transgendered symbols. Apparently,
the horror. How could they do this?
The pride flag.
That's the trans pride
flag. Oh, sorry, you're right. It is the transgender flag. As soon as it came out of my mouth, it's like, wait, pride flag, wasn't that like 2 years ago?
Forgot a word there, yeah.
And an assortment of other oddball additions. They've also, as Jules is making a point, they have, yes, also oddly called for Aussie thongs.
I can't wait to use that emoji.
That, by the way, in case anybody
that's what I'm going to use in daily conversation, absolutely.
Yeah. In case anyone's unclear, those are sandals. Just sandals. Nothing special. Okay. This is not a form of underwear.
No.
Show title.
That's next. they're saving that one for next year. Yeah. And they also have some animals. There's a dodo bird for some reason. Again, I don't know who has been vouching for a dodo bird emoji, but it's in there now.
Hey, the dodo is extinct or near extinct, whichever.
It is extinct.
Yeah.
And so there's also a woolly mammoth, which is also extinct, and a polar bear, which will be extinct soon. I'm sorry, that's terrible.
Oh, well, we're headed to the dark place again at the end of the episode. How does this keep happening?
I'm sorry. New emoji. Lots of fun. And I don't know what it is about emoji. Every single time we post about emoji, the comments are terrible. Because there's always like one or two things that really set off a certain group of people. And it's amazing. We can post about so many things. But perhaps the most innocent of topics, which are the little pictures in your phone you can put in text, that's what sets off so many people. It's almost incredible.
Yeah, it is something. Our comments section actually remained pretty good for several hours, but it eventually did turn very, very bad.
Yes, most people behave themselves. It was just a few that couldn't.
But I'd like to point out, these same people, I guarantee, did not notice two of the most important emoji, ninja and person in tuxedo. They exist. We can now have ninja emoji. I'm sorry, but there's no way this is not it. I mean, this is fantastic. This is fixing the world right here. And also, there are some weirdly, very accurately anatomical heart and lungs emoji, which I'm blown away by this. Corbin, you're muted.
Okay, I'm sorry. I just said I'm definitely going to use those.
At a bare minimum, you have to use the ninja.
Yeah, I will just continue using the same five emoji I've used for here. I use the the couple of faces, sometimes the middle finger one, usually in work chats. But yeah,
and I got to say, my favorite of all the additions is bubble tea. Really, only just because I like bubble tea.
Ryan was very excited about
that. Oh, no, this will actually make it into my conversations at some point. I promise this.
Yeah. Well, or what will actually happen, which is usually the case, is that your iPhone friends will start to use it, and you'll just get an empty box for the next 6 months until the Android update hits your phone.
Oh, so actually, that was the other thing I meant to say about this, and I almost forgot. The good news is that probably won't happen. Because by now, most developers should be using the Emoji Compat library, going all the way back to Android 4.4. This will give your apps the ability to show new emoji, even if your system does not support them. So,
wow.
Yes, in theory.
Technology in theory, never ceases to amaze me.
Yeah. In theory, your Android apps should be showing the correct emoji basically right away, though. Chances are you're still not going to see this until the next version of Android ships, because that's usually just kind of how they do that. And that's, you know, that's going to be what, October-ish, or I guess a bit before, but whatever.
Is this one of those parts of Android that they made into like a modular component, like with Project Mainline? Do we know?
No, it's not that. It's
why? If that's I so remember, bizarre.
Oh, no, this is actually, I think, better.
Okay.
If I understand correctly,
I know there's the Play Store library that can kind of do this, but
okay, well, that's kind of what it is. But if I understand correctly, Play Services basically downloads updated versions of the emoji. And as long as you're using the library that will use them, it basically talks to Play Services instead of talking to the OS, then you just get the update. The point is, though, it is an update that comes to you separately and just lives on your device. So, yeah. It should be basically instantaneous for everybody.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's another thing Huawei is going to have to replace on their services.
Yeah. Though this one's easy, at least.
Yeah, that should be, yeah, pretty easy. They'll just steal the emoji font from Google and call it a day.
Yeah, and as far as I'm aware, I don't think Apple does anything like this. So, you know.
Well, Apple doesn't have to.
Fair point.
Yeah. Must be nice to have a platform that gets fast and frequent updates. Mm.
True enough. So speaking of fast and frequent, I think that describes our show.
Ooh.
Ah,
well, yeah. Not necessarily fast this time.
Oh, fair enough. I told you, watch this be a long episode.
I know. I need to stop saying that. I keep jinxing myself every
time.
Well,
to be fair, I say to be fair way too much. But to be fair, we do have a lot to edit out of this one.
We do. Jules is going to rack up a lot of hourly billing, editing out all my dogs.
But anyway, I'll let you close it out.
All right. So all the topics we've talked about today can be found at androidpolice.com/podcast. We're live 4 times a week, most weeks, at twitch.tv/androidpolice. And we'd love to hear your thoughts about the show. You can send us an email at podcast@androidpolice.com. On Twitter, I'm Corbin Davenport. Cody is at Cody_TOOMBS. Our producer, Jules Wong, is at Point Jules, and our theme music is by Holm. We should have another guest soon on the podcast. TK Bay of XDA Developers will be joining us on Tuesday. Fingers crossed for that. But yeah, keep an eye out on our Twitter for changes in the stream schedule, and we'll see you next time.
Good night, everybody.
And you can subscribe to us for free if you have an amp. Okay, hold on. I have to get my dog to shut up because Jules, I don't think he'll be able to edit it out. So give me 1 second. I'll come back and start this again. I just have to tell the dog to shut up.
Oh... Welcome to live performances. They're awesome, aren't they? It just imagine this is what it's actually like when people go to live tapings of TV shows. You get to see people screw up their lines. You get to see people changing clothes and doing everything else.
I have two dogs in my room now, so this isn't helping the problem. But if they can't see that the car's coming, they're fine.
You need to shut up. Zip it.
Okay, I'm going again. Jules, I'm sorry. You're going to have to edit out a lot of me. Just edit me out of the whole show. It's easier. And it'll be just like that Garfield minus Garfield comic. It'll just be Cody talking to himself for 40 minutes. But.
Yeah, I was going to say the opening will be, it's Friday, January 31st. Welcome alongside Cody Toombs. I'm...
You're like, and Cody, you just hear silence and then Cody's like, oh, good point. Yeah. Okay. All right. I'm sorry. I'm going to do this again.